firmly believe that kids are our future, and we want to help give them the tools to live a wonderful, healthy, and compassionate life.
Welcome to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, where we take you through a day in the life of animal rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Whether you are an experienced sanctuary staffer, one of the countless volunteers who work so hard at sanctuaries each day, or someone who just loves animals, we hope this journey can give you a behind-the-scenes peek into just what it takes to live the sanctuary life. Now, here's your host, Brandon Feisner, co-founder of Louisville, Kentucky's Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary.
Joining us for this week's episode is Deborah Blum, founder of Goatlandia Farm Animal Sanctuary in Santa Rosa, California. Goatlandia, whose mission is to have fun while helping animals, people, and the planet, officially became a nonprofit animal sanctuary in 2017. Since 2019, Goatlandia has been able to purchase an additional 38 acres of property in Sebastopol, giving them a location to not only host more public outreach events, such as goat yoga, vegan cooking classes, school tours, and more, but also space to be able to save more animals. Their original 2-acre Santa Rosa location still remains open. Deborah, who fell in love with goats at an early age, says, "Goats are really special beings." Before launching Goatlandia, Deborah worked in a variety of careers, from fashion design to commercial pilot, and she even owned and operated several San Francisco restaurants. It was a single video on animal agriculture that Deborah stumbled upon that made her change both her eating habits and her career. She said, "It was really disturbing because it was the first time that I had seen slaughterhouse footage, and I decided to be vegan overnight. When I did that, I started rescuing animals instead of buying them." Deborah, I want to say a very special thank you for joining us today. We are so excited to talk about your sanctuary life and the path that has led you here today.
Thank you, Brandon. I'm delighted to be here.
What was it in particular about that one video so many years ago that immediately transformed your life, setting you on the course to go vegan overnight, as you said, and eventually leading you to start Goatlandia Farm Animal Sanctuary?
Yeah, so it was really funny the way it happened. It was a video that I'd come across on my Facebook feed, and it had a really catchy title. It said, "The best video you'll ever see." And of course, you know, that's a fairly bold statement, so it caught my attention. And, you know, it was a speech by an animal activist named Gary Yourofsky. And, you know, I'd loved animals my whole life, and I had started several years ago to sort of ponder my food choices. And I was one of those eaters that, you know, I'd go out to eat in a restaurant and maybe I ordered fish because I felt weird about ordering beef. You know, I was starting to sort of have thoughts about eating animals. And this video was, you know, one of the most shocking things I've ever seen. It was definitely the first time that I had seen firsthand slaughterhouse footage and had heard someone present the facts of animal agriculture in such a matter-of-fact way. And Gary made such a compelling argument, you know, from several perspectives, morally and health-wise and environmentally, for not eating animals, that I was blown away, quite frankly. I cried all the way through it, and I was so shocked by what I saw and so moved by what I saw. And, you know, what I saw were animals treated really badly and animals that whose lives were being taken from them against their will. And, you know, I just thought, you know, I don't want to support this. It doesn't have to be this way. I can feed myself without supporting this. And so, you know, my decision to go vegan was almost an obligatory one. I really felt that if I was going to put my actions in alignment with my values, which is one of doing no harm and treating others the way that we would want to be treated, I had no choice but to go vegan. You know, I otherwise I'd be a hypocrite. So it was really seeing the very graphic truth behind animal foods and behind animal agriculture that prompted this change.
And then from that change, what kind of, because obviously going vegan was, like you said, almost felt obligatory to aligning your values and your actions. What took you from I'm going to go vegan to I'm going to start an animal sanctuary, because that's an even bigger jump.
It is, absolutely, yeah. It's the next step in the progression. So it was really interesting. So one of the restaurants that I was a partner in at the time in San Francisco, we used to buy cheese from a dairy up here in Sebastopol. So we had done a staff field trip and brought our servers and bartenders up, and we visited this dairy. And it was the first time I had really seen a big herd of goats in one place. And I fell in love with goats. I just decided, you know, I have to have goats in my life. They're very dog-like. They're very confident and curious and fun. So the first couple of goats I ever got as pets were from this dairy. So, you know, here I am like getting pets from dairy itself and buying chicks at the feed store. Then seeing this video and learning about the truth behind animal agriculture. And then my next step was like, wow, there's all these animals that are killed because they're born the wrong gender or because people are going to eat their bodies. And so the natural progression was to want to rescue them, you know, and also living here in Sonoma County, it's such a strong agricultural area. Driving around, I used to see these beautiful green fields with cows grazing and goats and sheep and think, oh, this is so beautiful and idyllic. Then when I learned about dairy, I learned like all those animals, most of them are mothers. Either that or they're animals that are going to be killed for food. So the reality behind that vision that I had was totally different. And I became awakened and I just decided to start rescuing animals because I realized all around me what was happening behind closed doors. So that really prompted me to start rescuing. And the first thing I did was reach out to that very dairy where I got my first couple goats and ask if I can rescue some of the boys, which fortunately they let me do. So that was kind of the start of it.
Yes. And it's interesting that idyllic environment, that picturesque, perfect view of everything is kind of where that whole marketing tagline that I know they've used for so many years of like happy cows are from California and it just plays into the marketing ploys that dairy and so many of these other industries use to make people believe that to kind of put that false belief into their head as to how the animals are treated. And like you said, it's once you see one of those videos, those images never leave your mind.
They absolutely don't, Brandon. And it's tough because as a sanctuary, you know, part of our mission is to educate people, and we want to do so in a very upbeat, positive way. But most of the time when people make a lifestyle change, like going vegan and living compassionately, it's something pretty big that prompts it. So sometimes those disturbing graphic images and a very, you know, honest speech about the facts of animal agriculture, that's what it takes some people to change. And that's what did it for me, you know? So I think every form of advocacy has its place. And certainly, you know, we don't show disturbing videos or graphic videos here. We like to tell the stories of the animals and how eating plant-based is good for your health and all that. But yeah, it certainly has those forms of knowledge certainly have a place, and it's the truth. So people need to see it when they're ready, you know?
Yes, definitely. And it is nice when you can just kind of let the animals do the talking for you. It's amazing when people come and visit and spend time with the animals, what just that visit, the impact and change that can make in people at times without you ever having to say a word.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, their happy faces and kind personalities really, they help us do the job of educating and changing hearts and minds for sure.
Especially goats, like you said, like the puppy dogs of animal agriculture.
Yeah, they're troublemakers, which is part of why I love them. They're very curious.
Yes. So Goatlandia has obviously grown quite a bit from its beginnings in 2017. What can you tell us about Goatlandia today and what different species currently call the sanctuary home?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we started with goats, and chickens followed shortly thereafter. We obviously we've, we specialize in farm animals. So animals that are farmed for food or for, you know, body secretions like dairy. So we have cows, we have sheep, we have goats, we have sheep, we have pigs, we have chickens, we have ducks, we have turkeys, we have geese. We also have two horses, which is kind of a departure from our mission. We've rescued cows in the past, but we don't have cows because cows just take an enormous amount of space. So we've rescued 8 in the past and been able to rehome them fairly quickly. But apart from cows, we have most of the other animals that are farmed, save for maybe rabbits. So we basically specialize in small ruminants like goats and sheep. But pigs are definitely one of the more fun species that we have. And we just got geese about a year and a half ago, and I'll tell you, they have so much personality. So at the present time, we have about 200 animals between both of our locations, and about 60 of those are birds, and the rest are ruminants and pigs and horses.
Just incredible. And yes, I love hearing about the geese and their personality. We have stories from back before we were a rescue and having a goose, and just the personality that they can have is incredible. And it's fun when people can see and experience that. So it is interesting to hear you mention them, because they are a very, fun, incredible species that are often overlooked.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed.
Prior to starting the sanctuary, how much experience did you have with many of those farmed animal species that now call Goatlandia home?
I had very little or no experience. I've had dogs my whole life growing up. So, you know, now we do have 3 livestock guardian dogs, 2 of which are rescues. So I had a little bit of dog experience, but I really didn't have any experience with goats or sheep or pigs or chickens. So I kind of learned on the job, so to speak. And I remember the first day that I took, that I brought my first 2 baby goats home, and I don't have human children, but I remember thinking, like, wow, this must be what it feels like to bring a baby home. Like, you're responsible for this little life and this little being, and you're like, oh my gosh, what do I do, you know? But fortunately, I've just, you know, I've made a lot of good connections over the years and some great veterinarians, and certainly, I have some positive relationships with people that do run dairies, and they've been able to give me good advice, and I study, and I've learned, and I've read. I really, really enjoy the veterinary medical aspect of animal care and rescuing. So that's kind of a passion of mine. So gathering knowledge and trying to do the best that we can to not only to heal the rescued animals that we have, but to care for them in the best way possible is something that I just love. So I definitely know a lot about ruminants. I would say that's by far my specialty.
Yes, and that's an important thing to know and understand, that the veterinary medicine side of things, because a lot of times, especially with ruminants, there's not always, depending on time and where you're located and all of that, there's not always vets that are super experienced in some of those species, at least not nearly as much as there are dogs and cats and our companion animals and then even like horses with equine vets. It's a lot more difficult to find vets that will treat and are knowledgeable about the ruminants than it is some of the others. So it is, I think that's an important thing that you discussed there, is making sure that we educate ourselves and learn as much as we can, and then utilizing the resources. Like you said, I think that as much as the dairy industry and some of that are the enemy to some extent, they also can be a very valuable resource when it comes to making sure that we are taking care of the animals and utilizing that resource when necessary.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, where we are located here in Northern California, Goatlandia, we are really fortunate to have some fantastic local vets that we work with, and also to be so close to UC Davis, which is one of the best veterinary teaching hospitals in the country. So we have just great veterinarians very close to us, and that's definitely a blessing. We rely on our vets a lot. We don't self-diagnose and self-treat because we want to do things the right way. So we really don't skimp on veterinary costs. You know, we have a lot of knowledge. So if something, you know, someone spikes a fever or someone starts to get sick, we can help relieve their pain and generally point them in the right direction. But we always rely on our vets to accurately diagnose and treat all of our animals that need it. So.
Yes. And I will say I am extraordinarily jealous of all of you all out in California, because of all the sanctuaries that we follow throughout the country, it seems that in general, your all's access to high quality vets with knowledge of ruminants seems to be higher there than of almost anywhere else in the country. So you all are very, very fortunate in that regard.
We are indeed, yeah.
So with nearly 5 years into being an official sanctuary, I'm sure that you have enough rescue stories for us to do a couple different episodes, but is there one specific rescue that stands out in your mind that you would say is the most memorable?
Oh gosh. Wow. Yeah. There's so many fantastic stories, and each in its own right is wonderful. But, we have a goat right now who has a very, very interesting story. Her name is Judy, and she was part of a herd down in Southern California. The owner had bought goats to clear property, and the piece of property that they had these goats on wasn't where they lived. So they'd kind of bought this herd of goats and put it on the property and just sort of ignored the goats and didn't really take good care of them. So one by one, each goat in this herd got killed by coyotes, which was really incredibly sad and just an example of how they really didn't take care of these goats and make sure that they were safe and protected, because that's our responsibility as their guardians. So a neighbor who lived next to these where these goats were placed had been watching this scenario, and one day saw this one goat named Judy bleeding out in the field, standing next to this other goat that had been killed by a coyote. And she was compelled to take action. She's like, I just can't see this happen anymore. So she was able to get the goat from the owner, and through contacts that we have in Southern California, you know, reach out to us and said, will you take this goat? And we said, absolutely. So we drove down, picked Judy up, brought her to the sanctuary. We had someone who was interested in adopting goats, and they adopted Judy. And, you know, sometimes they just don't fit in their new home. And this was the case with Judy. The goats didn't really like her that much. So, you know, of course, we want everyone to be happy in their new home, and Judy wasn't. So we brought her back to Goatlandia. And then about a month later, we noticed she was acting really strange in the morning. She was walking in circles, uncoordinated. She was ataxic, as they say in veterinary medicine. And she was running into things, and she was vocalizing. So something was clearly wrong with her. So, you know, I put on my thinking cap and started coming up with differential diagnoses. We rushed her to UC Davis. And one of the concerns was that she has rabies, because all the other goats were killed by coyotes, even though rabies is very, very rare. So anyway, we rushed her up to UC Davis, and they treated her with, you know, IV antibiotics, IV fluids, did a bunch of tests, did spinal tap, treated her with thiamine, and it turns out she had a condition called polioencephalomalacia, which is the first time I had ever had that happen. And the treatment is thiamine. It's basically a neurological disease that's caused by lack of thiamine. So, you know, here I was really worried that Judy was really sick and we were going to have to make the call to euthanize her and she wouldn't survive. And fast forward a couple weeks later, she was at UC Davis for a week, got all the treatments she needed. She came back to Goatlandia, her vision's completely restored, and she's like a new goat. She's just healthy and happy, and her personality is shining. And it's just felt so good to know that, you know, we had the ability to not only to rescue her, but to heal her through what she had. So I love introducing Judy to visitors here, because she's such a different goat than she was when she came. She's really blossomed and is healthy and happy. So that's a great story.
Definitely. Yes, Judy sounds like quite the warrior. I mean, survive the coyotes, but then got through the polio there. I mean, and that is something that I think a lot of people that are first getting into goats, like when you talked about seeing it and you immediately jump to worst case scenario, that is one of those like few disorders, though, that if it's not treated, like if you all weren't on top of that as much as you were, becomes deadly, can become deadly very quickly.
Absolutely.
So I'd love to love to hear that she did as well as she did and recovered. And
yeah,
that's incredible. So I know you all purchased, starting in 2019, an additional 20 acres of property there in Sebastopol for Goatlandia to expand, with plans kind of to originally move in the summer of 2020. How much of an impact did the pandemic have on those plans, and where do things stand as of today?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, the pandemic definitely affected everyone a little bit differently, but for us, it was really tough because our tours stopped, our events stopped, and being a nonprofit, you know, a large part of our revenue to do the work that we do comes from our tours. So our revenue stream halted, our tours halted. Because of the safety concerns, we had to cut way, way back on our volunteer staff. So definitely, you know, our workload went up, our cash flow went down. So, you know, like a lot of people, we just had to sort of slow things down and work a little bit harder ourselves. And definitely we're heading towards the goal, even though we've had a little couple bumps in the road because of the pandemic, we're still heading towards opening over there. So our plan is to open with tours starting next spring. So generally, we take the winter off because it's raining and cold and muddy, and it's just not fun for people to do tours. So we close around Thanksgiving and open in March. And this year, it's great because the winter will give us time to get everybody moved over, get the barn ready, get the volunteer center ready, you know, set up our merchandise store, set up our yoga deck. So we're really, really excited to do that. And, you know, we're a pretty small team here, but my husband does a lot of our own building himself. So we build our own fences, we build our own shelters. So right now we're kind of in the thick of planning and building and getting ready to open in 2023.
So just delayed things a few years there, but still on track.
Yeah, we're still going to make it happen for sure.
So one thing, and I know you just kind of talked about this in your response, and we haven't really touched on that yet in many of our episodes, is just the overall impact that COVID-19 had on sanctuaries. And so much of that was directly related to the public outreach that you just talked about. And I mean, just bringing that almost to a grinding halt and stopping that completely. And but I know that personally, just seeing online and the sanctuaries we've interacted with, it also allowed many sanctuaries to focus on different ways to connect with the public. And I know I've seen your all's virtual tour, which was incredibly amazing. Anybody that hasn't seen that, go check it out. It's really cool to be able to feel like you were there. What would you say was the most difficult part of running a sanctuary during the pandemic, and are there any positive takeaways from this experience?
Yeah, so you know, the hard parts were definitely like the fiscal impact was pretty challenging, and also, you know, a lot of our guests, you know, our tour stopped, so we didn't have guests as much, and quite frankly, like, we just missed having people here. We missed having visitors and sharing the animal stories and sharing, you know, the opportunity to teach people this beautiful choice we have to live compassionately. Like, we missed everyone, you know? So that was really hard. It was really, really fun to resume tours and have the public back. And, but on the flip side, it also gave us kind of a little pause and a break to, you know, look at our organization and sort of pivot. And our social media presence definitely blossomed because that's the way that we were communicating with the public and our followers. And for me, you know, it got me away from my computer a little bit and more outside caring for animals, which I love. I wish I could do that all day, every day, you know, but as the executive director, a lot of my job is administrative. So, you know, the positive impact of it is I got to spend a lot more time outside, which I absolutely love. And we got to work on our social media presence and just, you know, take a moment to look at the organization and, you know, fine tune some things and think about it without being so busy. And like, how do we want to grow? How do we want to, you know, improve? And you know, so you have to see the silver lining, I think, in every challenge that presents itself. So, and it was really fun to reopen.
Yes, it made something that felt like say 2.5 years ago, just felt like, oh, this is just another day. All of a sudden, welcoming people back was this really big deal.
For sure. Yeah.
So speaking of public outreach events, you just about a week ago now, you all hosted a really cool fundraiser event called Blues Brews and Vegan Barbecue. Can you tell us more about that really unique event?
Sure. So it was the first year that we've done this event, and we do a lot of food-based events because I love food and my background's in hospitality. So, you know, we offer tours with lunches and dinners with lunches. We do catering, things like that. But, you know, we really wanted to do a fun, like, outdoor party with live music. And so one of our board members, her parents actually hosted it at their beautiful property in Santa Rosa. And we had a live band that played blues music, and we handed out like Ray-Ban sunglasses to everybody. And we had a live auction and a silent auction. And we had vegan barbecue. So we did mac and cheese and vegan fake ribs, potato salad, cupcakes, sausage and pepper skewers. We had about like 10 different food items, and it was really great. People were amazed that the food was vegan and that it was so delicious. So it was really a fun day. We raised about $25,000 for the sanctuary for our rescue work, and we had about 80 plus people. And it was great. It was the start of an annual tradition. So next year we are absolutely going to do it again, first weekend of June, and we'll be doing it on our new property. So we are very excited to make this an annual tradition and to welcome our friends back next year.
Well, if I hear vegan barbecue and vegan mac and cheese, and I need to just book a plane ticket for the first week of June.
Great.
So another amazing outreach event that we must talk about is your upcoming Kids for Compassion summer camp at Goatlandia. This is, I mean, if you had to pick one of the two or three coolest things I've seen recently that any sanctuary is doing, this is without a doubt it. This amazing 5-day camp will take place in July of this year at Goatlandia, with sessions for kids 6 to 9 and 10 to 12. And I know that the goal for this camp said it's to instill in students an appreciation and respect for the world we live in, as well as kindness and compassion for the animals we share it with, ourselves and each other. What can you tell us about what campers can expect at this unique summer camp?
Yeah, so this is the first year we've hosted this camp, and we are very, very excited. We firmly believe that kids are our future, and we want to help give them the tools to live a wonderful, healthy, and compassionate life. So we have different topics that we're going to be teaching each day of the week-long session, everything from environmental practices, health benefits of eating plant-based and healthy eating, animal anatomy. We're going to talk about things like kindness and inclusion and equity, you know, the fact that we're all different, but we all have value and we all have meaning. So, and that's something that that we love sharing. You know, living compassionately is not just about our food choices. It's about how we treat ourselves, how we treat each other, how we treat people that are different than us, and celebrating those differences and realizing that we all are connected. So we have some really exciting guest speakers, some doctors that are going to speak about eating healthy, some veterinarians are going to talk about animal anatomy. So yeah, we are super excited to do this. And kids are basically just going to have fun and explore kindness and eat great food.
Okay, now I just want to say I'm super jealous that I didn't get to come to summer camp at Goatlandia when I was a kid.
Me too.
Yes, that sounds like an incredible experience, and that's something that I know, like you said, children are our future, and so many of the choices that we make, although they are extraordinarily important in this moment, continuing to make that compassion live on far past us is the most important thing we can do. So I absolutely love this idea.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's something that we teach not only to children who visit here, but to adults. You know, I think eating plant-based, living vegan, living compassionately is an amazing choice that we have. It's something that is filled with kindness and health and empowerment. You know, a lot of people think that as vegans we're giving something up or we're sacrificing something, and it's that's absolutely not the case. We are making this wonderful choice to live in a way that supports ourselves, supports other beings, supports a healthy planet. So it's this wonderful opportunity to put our actions in alignment with our values. And I think that's wonderful. I mean, if we can all live in a way that doesn't create harm, why wouldn't we? So we like to teach this way of living as a beautiful choice. So, and we teach that to kids and adults both. So.
Awesome. Another thing that I know you were working on just prior to the pandemic was your hike and lunch with goats experience that you were doing through Airbnb Animal Experiences. What can you tell us about those experiences? And did you ever get a chance to get started with them? Are there plans for the hike and lunch with goats experiences to resume?
Yeah, so we hosted or we used the Airbnb hosting platform for a while, the Airbnb experiences, and it was absolutely fantastic. The problem is that where Goatlandia is right now, we are zoned rural residential, so we don't have a permit for quote unquote public events. So we can't really use a public platform to advertise our experience, but we absolutely do offer goat hikes with lunch, and we do them all the time. So the way we kind of advertise our events is just privately. So when people contact us or they look at our website and reach out and say, oh, I really want to come for a visit, we basically answer back and say, we'd love to have you. These are all the different things that you can do, whether you want to come for a group tour, private tour, tour and dinner, tour and lunch, goat hike. So it's definitely something that we offer. We just offer it more on a private, personal basis. So we usually take our goats to a lake that's about 10 minutes north of us. And then sometimes we have lunch at the lake. If the weather's nice, we want a picnic. Sometimes we come back to the sanctuary and have lunch. But yeah, we're absolutely doing goat hikes, and people love it, and the goats love it.
And I will say it's incredible when the moment that one person takes a picture of their experience, whether it's a goat hike or goat yoga or just visiting the sanctuary and post it, how many messages all of a sudden you start getting just from that one single post that are like, hey, when can I come do this? Can I be involved? Can I do this? So it is, as hard as it is at times to not be out in sort of the public space, it still certainly works because it spreads itself.
Absolutely. And that's where social media is so impactful. You know, people sharing their experiences, sharing their photos. And I think by doing these kind of fun and diverse activities, it just enables people to relax. And then they spend time with these animals and they learn their personalities and, you know, opens their mind, opens their heart. So, another thing that we do that's really fun is bottle feeding the babies. So we rescue about 3 dozen, babies every year from dairies and from meat farms. So people love doing that. They come and help us bottle feed the babies, which is a very incredible experience.
Yes, that is a way to make a bunch of goat fans really is baby goats and bottle feeding. Are there any other fun outreach events planned at this moment for Goatlandia here kind of moving forward that you would like to share with us?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we do about 200 to 300 tours and events a year. So during the season when we're open, which is spring, summer and fall, we do group tours every other weekend. We do dinners here at Goatlandia and tours about quarterly. We're going to be at Veg Fest in September. We're doing some big catering jobs for some other animal rescue groups. There's so many things that it's hard to list them all. So the best thing to do is sign up for our newsletter, because that's how we usually tell people what we're doing next. So lots of stuff happening. We're going to be speaking at a fundraiser for Blackberry Creek this weekend. We're going to be catering for Winapalooza, which is a fellow animal sanctuary group that we know and love. So we do a lot of things with other rescue groups, but we also, you know, participate in community events a lot. So lots of fun things planned, I promise.
Yes, you all are staying plenty busy and spreading that compassion and love far and wide.
We are.
One big thing that I wanted to talk to you all about, and actually we even had someone message us and your name come up as one of the ones that they said, hey, I definitely want you to talk to Goatlandia about disaster preparation. And in California, you all have to deal with many issues that most of us in the rest of the country will thankfully never have to deal with. And one of the most common issues that I know we see every single year affecting sanctuaries throughout California is wildfires. And that's an issue I know you all personally dealt with back in October of 19 with the Kincade fire there and in Santa Rosa, and was literally coming right toward your location there. And I saw you describe the scene at Goatlandia as apocalyptic. Can you tell us what it was like during that time as you had to uproot your entire sanctuary and move 20 plus miles south to, I know you all went to Animal Place Sanctuary in Petaluma, and just what was it like to do that in the middle of not knowing what you were going to come back to or how much time you had and all of that?
Yeah, it was definitely surreal, I guess, is one of the best ways that I could describe it. We've actually had to evacuate 3 times here in the last 5 years. The first being the Tubbs fire, which, as you know, happened very quickly and took everybody by surprise. And that was just, you know, running on adrenaline. It kind of reminded me a lot of the flight training I did when I was a commercial pilot and the ability to think logically in the face of challenges. And, you know, as a pilot, we're trained to handle emergencies and you have to just think clearly and compartmentalize and kind of like calm your emotions, follow the checklist, address the problem. And it's kind of the same with fighting fires. My husband and I are both disaster service workers with Sonoma County. So we are trained in fireland safety and animal technical rescue. So during the fires that we've had here in Northern California, not only are we evacuating our own sanctuary, but when able, we're dispatched through the county to go rescue other people's animals and bring them to safety. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you just have to like click into gear and just remain calm and do what you're trained to do. And that's kind of what we did. Every fire is a little bit different. We make the decision to evacuate based on location of the fire, wind direction, weather prognosis. But sometimes, like even if the fire is not that close, but the air is bad, we'll move our birds, for instance, because they're pretty delicate from a respiratory standpoint. But it was difficult. It was difficult looking out and seeing, you know, year after year, red sky and seeing smoke and seeing pages, you know, ash pages from books as ash floating down in the driveway, like bits and pieces of people's lives. It was very difficult and it was very surreal. And, you know, like a lot of hardship that we face in life, it just makes you very grateful for what we have. And I'm grateful that we can be of service to the community in this way as well, helping bring their animals to safety. And, you know, we actually housed some people during the Tubbs fire here who had lost their home. And, you know, it's in giving that we truly receive and being of service. And that helps make these times of such great challenge, you know, manageable. So we were very lucky last year not to have fires in our area. So we're crossing our fingers, but I will say that as a community, Sonoma County and Napa County both, we've done a lot of training in the past 5 years. And, you know, I feel like we're really prepared to what comes our way. And fires is definitely one of the biggest challenges we face, but we're ready if we're needed.
Yes. And, you know, I've said it again and or said it before, and I'll say it again, that not all superheroes wear capes, and the fact that you all are doing not only what you're doing for your own animals, but then that you are out there and assisting so many others to make sure that these animals are staying safe and doing that, just thank you a million times, because those are the kind of things that I think are so often overlooked in those kind of situations, is what do we do to make sure that the animals stay safe as well as the people.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, we have a very robust adoption program, and that's something that we try and teach to our adopters, like, hey, you know, you need to have a plan for your animals. Like, you know, if you're going to have a herd of six goats, you should have a trailer, at least a van, or like, here's a number for Sonoma Cart. Here's our number. Like, if you need help, we are here for you. You know, we try and teach our adopters not only how to care for their animals in times of emergency, but also that there's help, you know, that we're here for them. So it's truly a privilege to be able to help in that way. Absolutely.
Yes. And so going back to just kind of the day-to-day life at Goatlandia, can you walk us through just a brief overview of what a day in either your life or say the life of one of your amazing staff members? I love watching your all's little snippets on social media and going through and meeting everyone and seeing what they're doing. Can you just walk us through what a day in their life kind of looks like there at Goatlandia?
Yeah. So, gosh, every day is so different. And we have a very small team. So it's just my husband and I who are, you know, we work every day, but we're volunteers technically for the sanctuary. We have a full-time sanctuary manager named Megan, who's fantastic. And her job is probably the most constant or the most consistent. So her day consists of, you know, getting here really early in the morning and directing the team of volunteers, animal care, giving the animals medication, coordinating volunteers, scheduling, and then any kind of random errands, because there's always a lot of errands around a farm. myself, my days vary greatly. So when Megan's off, I run the volunteers, I do medication for the animal, I help with animal care. Today I did animal care in the morning, and then I prepped some food for a catering event that we have this weekend. Sometimes I'll have meetings. Sometimes I'll have site visits for adoption. I also have clients that I trim their goat hooves for them. So really I wear about 12 different hats. and then, you know, we have a couple people that help us with social media, that Jenny, who does our social media, and then Marie, who helps with fundraising. So, you know, there's so many aspects to running an animal sanctuary. It's a business in itself, but then it's a teaching organization, and then having all these animals, there's the animal care aspect. So yeah, it's pretty diverse. And that's one thing I love about this work, is that every day is completely different. When I was flying as a commercial pilot, it was pretty boring. I just couldn't sit still in a cockpit for that long. So my job now is just wonderful and diverse and active and fun. And yeah, lots of different tasks involved.
Yes. And every time I'm convinced that every time you think that you have this life figured out and you have a routine down, something is going to come in and rattle your play.
Yep. You have to be flexible.
Hearing you talk about volunteers and how big of a role they play in your organization and stuff, how many volunteers do you all have at this point there at Goatlandia? Just kind of a brief over that number.
So volunteers are actually the lifeblood of any nonprofit. We could not do this work without our volunteers. And I'm so incredibly grateful to everyone who has volunteered and currently volunteers and all those future volunteers out there. I volunteered myself in wildlife rescue for a number of years, and I'm just so incredibly grateful. Right now we have about 70 volunteers who are regular volunteers and who are active. So between the two locations, you know, at any given time in the morning or the evening, we have between 2 and 5 people. And their job is to feed everyone and tuck them in at night and clean their barns and care for them. So yeah, we could not do this work without our volunteers, and I'm incredibly grateful. And also our special events, you know, a lot of our volunteer team helps out at special events, whether they're serving food or drinks or, you know, bringing the animals around to meet our guests at events. So we have lots of volunteer opportunities.
Awesome. If our listeners want to learn more or follow you online, what is the best way for them to stay up to date with everything that is going on with Goatlandia?
Yeah, that's a great question. So three ways for sure. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram. Those are the two main social media platforms that we use. And then the other and probably the most popular way Well, I guess it's they're all popular, but the best way is to sign up for our newsletter. So we have a list of thousands of followers. And because we're kind of a smaller organization and we don't have public open hours, a lot of our events are communicated through our to our friends through our newsletter. So if you want to be in the know, if you want to get first crack at like tickets for really fun events, sign up on our newsletter. That's the best thing to do. And that's how we communicate with everybody that we love and everybody that follows us and loves to come to our events is through our newsletter. And you can do that on our website at goatlandia.org.
Awesome. And we will make sure to tag all of the social media accounts on your website in the show notes for anyone that is interested in those. And I know that as we've talked about everything and talked about the outreach events and fundraisers and the hardships of the pandemic, and one topic that comes up in our conversation today and every week as we do this with sanctuaries throughout the country is sanctuary life is expensive. And if our listeners are interested in supporting Goatlandia with a donation, what is the best way to do that? What avenues do you all accept donations through? What's the best way for them to reach out to you all to do so?
Yeah, so we accept just about any kind of donation. Like you said, that's the resources are what enable us to do this work, and we're grateful to everyone who supports it. The easiest way to donate is probably online, but we also accept checks in the mail made out to Goatlandia, and that that saves us the processing fee. But definitely going to our website and donating is the probably the quickest and the easiest way to support our work. Also becoming a member of Goatlandia, being a regular monthly supporter, you get a lot of invites to events before the public. You also get to come to our group tours for free. So becoming a regular sustaining supporter and signing up monthly is also a really great way to not only help us once, but to continue to help us do this work. So, for the cost of a couple lattes, even $20 a month, $50 a month, it really goes a long way and it helps. Like I before I opened Goatlandia, I was a supporter of numerous other sanctuaries and I would just sign up to be a monthly supporter. And, I don't really feel it coming out of my checkbook, but I know that every month I'm giving a little bit. And over time, that really makes a big difference. So yeah, several ways to support our work. And sometimes even if people can't give financially, come be a volunteer or come help us out. There's always work to be done when you have animals and when you have a sanctuary. So numerous ways to support our work in a rescue.
Yes, definitely. And I know that every dollar makes a difference. So it's one of those things where if you are someone that is sitting there and you say, hey, I've only got $5 this month, is that enough to get? It is never not enough. Every dollar makes a difference in this world, and being able to help allow sanctuaries to continue to save lives.
Absolutely. Yep. $5 feeds our chickens. They're breakfast and dinner for a day. So they'll be very grateful. Every bit counts, of course.
So, Deborah, I want to thank you for once again being a part of this week's episode. I can't wait to see how Kids for Compassion summer camp goes later this summer. We may have to have you back on and follow up on that. And just can't wait to see what amazing outreach idea you all come up with next, because it seems like you all are right there on the cutting edge of some of the coolest outreach ideas that are out there.
Thank you. And yes, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here, and I so appreciate the opportunity to share Goatlandia with everyone out there and to share, the idea of living in a way that supports compassion and kindness. And that's a fantastic choice. And thank you so much, Brandon.
Thank you for listening to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, presented by Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary. To find out more about our podcast and how you can be a part of it, visit our webpage at butterflyvalleyrescue.com/podcast or join us on social media at Sanctuary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please remember to download the episode and recommend us to family and friends. See you next time.